Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials. For today's episode of the ACT podcast, I am speaking with Dr. Najat Khan, Chief Data Science Officer and Senior Vice President, Global Head, Strategy, Portfolio, and Operations, R&D, Janssen, Johnson & Johnson. Najat has been with Johnson & Johnson for over 5 years. Her experience and accomplishments cover three main areas: biological and medical science, AI and machine learning, and business leadership, strategy, and operations in the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry. Prior to Johnson & Johnson, Najat worked with the Boston Consulting Group, and she has done extensive work with her alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania. So thank you for joining me today, Najat.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. I gave a brief overview in the intro, but your education and career path seem to mesh together perfectly in your professional journey. So can you briefly describe your professional journey up to the present for our audience?
Happy to. I will caveat by saying that a retrospective view of one's career looks much more smooth than a prospective. And what I mean by that is, you know, I grew up in the time between Bangladesh and the UK. And, you know, one thing that struck me from a very young age is just the importance of healthcare, medicines, and therapies, but also healthcare equity. My parents are both physicians. And I think that is something that's been part of my core purpose, which is how do we drive the development, discovery of new medicines that can improve the health for all. So, you know, growing up, I did a lot of nonprofit work actually in Bangladesh that gives you a firsthand understanding of, you know, not just what a patient goes through, but then also what their families go through. Just the change you can have on a broader level if you can improve their lives. I came to the U.S. when I was 17. I did my undergraduate at Colgate University, and I focused on, you know, all aspects of science, biology, chemistry, physics, but I also focused actually my thesis on computational chemistry. I was really intrigued by the combination of the advancements in computer science and the impact it can have on science and making molecules better. I also did a minor in economics and business. I think, you know, for me, it's always been disciplines and the intersections of disciplines is where the new innovation and value comes. But then you need to have a deep understanding of business to ensure that it's focused and applied in the right way to have that true impact on patients that one wants to have. I then did my PhD, as you mentioned, in University of Pennsylvania. Again, focused in organic chemistry. I wanted to really learn how to make medicines with my own hands, but leverage a lot of computational work in order to make molecules better and more precisely, and ended up developing therapeutics and biosensors in the oncology space. After that, you know, I love the depth of expertise that you develop with that background, but I, you know, had that calling for really understanding and having a deep appreciation for strategy, business, and how to actually build and maintain successful businesses that can time and time again have impact for patients. And I ended up joining the Boston Consulting Group, was there for about 7 years. I have to say I was a fish out of water in the first 6 months, you know, coming out of academia, but learned rapidly and focused on multiple aspects of business in the life science industry, both R&D and commercial, so end to end, and then also some work in the provider and aerospace. It was a great understanding of not just content, like I mentioned, but also leadership styles and business styles and what makes companies succeed and how do you have early understandings of when a company is not going to be succeeding and how do you stay agile in your strategy and your execution. Following that, you know, as a senior principal and partner, following that, I really missed the aspect around being closer to developing medicines. That's always been my core or important health solutions, let's say. So I joined J&J 6 years ago, almost 6 years ago, and it's been such a privilege to be able to contribute to both what is our strategy, our pipeline, to ensure we have the best portfolio of medicines for our patients. And then also, and it's an and, leveraging data science as a core pillar for, you know, ushering a new era of how we make, discover, and develop medicines. Pleasure to work with some of the best leaders in industry, across different therapeutic areas, discovery, clinical operations, et cetera. So it's really been a significant team sport to infuse data science and how we think and work to have tangible business outcomes, which we can talk more about.
Wow, that is an incredible journey up to this point. And you said you came over here at 17 years old. I couldn't imagine that myself. That is such an age to make that big of a change. But thank you for that overview. And now moving into the next question, can you explain how chemistry and AI/data work together?
You know, I would say they go hand in hand really well. I always think about what is the opportunity, you know, important opportunity we're trying to solve for. So chemistry, as you know, like my love from all the work in graduate school and beyond, like chemistry is the core for how we have made so many medicines that are helping as an industry, right? Millions of people. And that requires a deep and rigorous and analytical understanding of the various atoms, the various interactions. How do you actually build the right molecules that can someday become a medicine that would sort of modify what a protein gone wrong to a more, you know, natural state? So if you think about that, it requires a deep understanding of the language of chemistry. And the language is not just the atoms, but also the nature of interactions, chemical reactions, retrosynthesis. Now, when I think about AI, AI has its own language, right? And what we're trying to do is leverage AI and other physics-based methods to generate, we talk about generative AI, to generate different molecular designs, but not just for the sake of it, but those that can actually become new medicines and can address the about 85% or so targets that exist today that don't have medicines to address them. So I see AI as very much hand in glove with what is done in chemistry to open the aperture of what can become of, you know, different designs, new designs, new molecules that can become medicines that we, you know, to address that 85%. I will say it is something that's done in lockstep because new designs in itself is not useful unless they have the right molecular properties, you know, whether it's ADME, off-target effects, stability, solubility, all of that, to really make sure that these are something you can synthesize. And then, so we call it synthetic accessibility, but then also something that has the right properties that can someday become a medicine. So they're both very deeply quantitative and strategic disciplines, where the whole, which is chemistry plus AI, is greater than the sum of the parts. So I see them very synergistic in driving better outcomes for medicines, better best-in-class or first-in-class medicines and targets that are causing diseases that we can address today. A lot more to be done in this space, but I'm really excited about what's happening and what's to come.
On that note, now we're really going to jump into more AI. J&J recently scored number 3 on the Pharma AI Readiness Index from CB Insights. So knowing that number and, you know, knowing that ranking, why is AI important to the company?
For us, what I would say is, you know, AI, artificial intelligence, machine learning, digital health solutions. As you've seen, there are multiple examples where it's transforming how we address diseases and improve the lives of patients. I can talk about how with some examples later on, but that is the core crux of what we do. Our credo, you know, we have our credo, which is our credo-led mindset is focused on what can we do to improve the health for humanity. And AI and data science is a very, very core pillar of how you can do that. So for instance, I just mentioned some of the examples in discovery, right? If you think about diseases today, a lot of diseases are named by, call them prostate cancer, or we, you know, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. These are the names of the physicians that identify the syndrome. But you want to really be able to define diseases by the biology that's driving the disease. That's the first order principles for driving precision medicine, right? Medicines for the right patient at the right time. Now, as we are generating more and more large data sets, data science and AI and machine learning, et cetera, are becoming critical to actually mine that data to identify novel targets to better understand which patient population is going to be faster progressing a disease versus not. That is the crux of understanding what's the root cause that is driving the disease, right? Second aspect is then you want to make a molecule that can actually perturb whatever is going wrong to fix it. And that's where generative AI and physics-based approaches, so it's an and. We have a lot of good computational approaches already in chemistry, and AI and machine learning is an and to it. That's really opening the aperture of what medicines we can, what molecules we can design that can one day become medicines, both to accelerate our timelines, but more importantly, and I really want to make this point, it's about doing things that we couldn't do before, novel insights to improve the probability of success of that something becomes a medicine. Then if you go into development, why is this so important? There are millions of people suffering diseases and the diagnostic gap is true, right? Which is, you know, we have AI algorithms that we have developed that can detect diseases up to multiple years in advance. So for instance, you know, AL amyloidosis or PAH, you know, the latter is a rare disease. There are medicines on the market, but on average, patients are diagnosed 3 to 4 years too late. These AI algorithms based on echo images, CG images, procedures that are done early on can actually, you know, flag that a person might have this disease. You close the diagnostic gap, you improve the outcomes for patients. So we have two algorithms with partners, external partners that we have worked on that have, you know, FDA's breakthrough device designation, and we're working on approval and then deployment with our commercial partners. Super important to actually close the diagnostic gap to improve outcomes for patients. Maybe I'll share two more examples and then I'll pause. And I like to, you know, use examples to make it real versus conceptually saying why this is important. It's because it's changing how we work and to make us better and in some cases faster. Another example is, you know, the use of more precise digital or RWE endpoints. So a lot of the endpoints, especially in diseases like immunology, neuroscience, are, you know, they're clinical endpoints. They're not as quantitative, right? It's a question, it's a criteria, you're adding up scores. There's some subjectivity to it. So for instance, in some of our Alzheimer's programs, we're actually starting to use digital endpoints. For instance, it's a set 10-minute self-assessment tool, digital tool that we leverage where consented by patients, of course, where how they're solving some problems, you know, augmented reality, you know, memory recall, they're asked to actually put objects in a certain place and are they remembering back, gives so much information to their care providers on much more sensitivity on their disease versus a snapshot now and then of how they're doing. Similar thing, you know, we are starting to develop digital endpoints for immunoderm diseases. And I love this example because it showcases two things. It's a fully decentralized trial. That means the patient joins the trial, engages with the trial, shares their, you know, images of their psoriasis plaques, et cetera, with their physician, all using their cell phone. And this is showing how you can actually develop these endpoints, not just for diseases that the endpoints are more subjective today, but we have very high levels of, you know, diversity in that trial because you're reducing patient burden. So not only are you getting endpoints that are more sensitive, but you're actually showcasing how you can reduce patient burden and, you know, improve outcomes and increase diversity in trials, which is very, very important to us. And last but not the least, it's also not just how we design our trials and digital endpoints, but how do we execute them? So we use AI, machine learning, and real-world evidence in order to predict which clinical sites would be the best for us so that we based on which patients are eligible. So instead of going for what we know, we are augmenting that important knowledge by letting the data take us to where the patients are. I mean, this is de-identified, but where their providers are, so that we are ensuring our trial sites are closer to our patients and thereby enhancing our acceleration of our trials. Again, I want to emphasize data science in itself is not enough. AI in itself is not enough. It's about partnering and leveraging that with all of the great work done by our clinicians, our operations, all of the different aspects of R&D, commercial, and so forth, so that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It's truly a team sport. you see that impact end to end, right? Discovery, development, great work done in commercial and also supply chain. So it is completely lifting and shifting how we think and work. And but the core purpose is back to our credo, is to improve the outcomes for patients.
So you kind of got into it a little bit, but more specifically, can you discuss how your team of data scientists are leveraging the power of AI and machine learning? And, you know, at Applied Clinical Trials, we hear a lot about real world data. So kind of from the aspect of that.
So here's what I would say, and I'll answer it in two ways. One is specifically how they're using it. And second is also an important concept that gets, I think, lost sometimes, which is, what are the enablers of something like this? It's as much technical as it is cultural as well, right? So let's talk about clinical trials. And one of the aspects with real-world data, and just for the audience, this is, you know, claims, EHR, lab results, increasingly these are being all de-identified data, they're being connected. So, you know, we can look at an aggregated way, the patient's journey, understand, you know, what's the standard of care, et cetera. So what we're doing is we're leveraging that real world data and layering on top of that ML algorithms that predict, you know, which sites are more likely to recruit patients, where do we actually have the eligible patient population that is appropriate for our trials. So, you know, we hear these stats all the time that only 4% or so of eligible patients actually join trials. Well, what can we do to improve that? One is, let's actually go to where the patients are, right? That is being patient-centric. And we don't just do this for recruitment, but we also make a huge emphasis on DE&I. So we're also using real-world data, understanding what they include, marrying that to the inclusion-exclusion of our trials, and also other parameters such as site performance and so forth, to really zero in on what areas should we be in to ensure that we have representative diversity that's representative of the diseases that these therapies are treating. So, and look, you know, we have examples where the top 50% of the sites recommended by these ML algorithms are performing, you know, 50% better. So it actually shows you the validation we've done, retrospective validation of that. And then also in terms of diversity, we have, you know, more and more programs that we are able to leverage these insights in order to ensure that we have the representative diversity, and we're starting to make really good progress there as well. Again, you know, we are deploying this across 50 of our trials. The goal would be to scale it across all of our programs. So, you know, clinical operations and our clinical leads working shoulder to shoulder with data scientists to make this happen. And that's where I'm going to touch on the second part, which is what enables J&J to do this. You mentioned the ranking, you mentioned, and I think it starts from the top. We have leadership that's really forward-looking. Our CEO, Joaquin Duato, has said, you know, progress we're going to make in the next decade in health is going to be more than what we've done in the last 100 years. And data science is one part of it. And there's so much other innovation going. But, you know, having that understanding, the foresight from the top, I think is extremely important, because that sets the tone for the rest of the company. And also John Reed, who is our executive vice president of pharma R&D, you know, has done great work leveraging data science his teams have in his prior roles, and has been a steadfast supporter. Now, the next part is, where do you apply AI? I want to emphasize this a lot. You don't want to do it everywhere. You want to do it where it's going to make a difference. Sounds obvious, but in practice, harder to do. So the philosophy that we have is, we start with the most important opportunity at hand, coupled with very rigorous and careful feasibility of where data science, like the AI algorithm or the ML, whatever it might be, can actually make a difference to that business outcome that we are trying to achieve. That's how we prioritize. So our strategy for me was to start in clinical operations first. And the reason is, you can actually, the time to value is shorter. You can actually show impacts, examples I mentioned. And then we started doing more in the patient stratification, precision medicine, and now great work with our discovery colleagues in the discovery space. So it really matters to be strategic of where you start and how you bring the organization along with tangible results. Number three, very important, is that it's also extremely important to be open-minded. And I think J&J does this phenomenally well. You know, it's part of the fabric of how we think, which is we say we're source agnostic. So we are agnostic to where innovation comes from, internal or external. On the data science side, it couldn't be truer, you know, and there's so many great academic institutions, startups, you know, and others that we have partnered with, whether it's data, algorithms, platforms, et cetera, in order to achieve a lot of the impact that you're seeing. We want the best and brightest minds, whether it's inside or outside, to help us to improve outcomes for patients. And then the last, but certainly not the least, AI ethics, data stewardship, the rigor, the highest standards of how we do this, we uphold, ensuring that we are incorporating all of the latest privacy and other regulations. Sometimes people ask me, like, Najat, what is the most amount of time your team spends? I say 60, 70% is spent on data cleaning, data annotation, all aspects of data engineering to ensure that, you know, we address any changes in the representation within the data sets. And we are very transparent as to how and we're doing this and the methodology that we are leveraging and the cultural part. I always say we have bilingual data scientists. I think that's what set J&J apart. And the reason I say that is, especially I would say for pharma R&D, or at least for pharma R&D, because of the fact that, you know, this is a cultural change and having data scientists, when I say bilingual, that are proficient first in data science, but also knowledgeable about, you know, scientific domain or various domains, ensures that it's a more integrated team that's working as part of one team with our clinicians, our operation leads, discovery leads, et cetera, so that again, the whole is greater than the sum of the part. Being integrated and being empowered, while, you know, data science is a new function we've developed, you know, from scratch, right? It was few people back in the day, 3 years ago, and now is a standalone function, just like we have discovery, just like we have, you know, oncology and others. However, to ensure that we have the best talent in-house, the integration and the empowerment so that they're working shoulder to shoulder, I think has been the secret to our success. We work on the right problems and we do it as one team.
And great. Kind of, I guess, in a sense to maybe put a bow on our conversation, AI and ML and clinical trials in general, like where do you see 5 years down the road? Like, what do you think that it could look like?
I think about it more than I probably want to admit. Look, clinical trials are a big part of what every company, biotech, pharma is doing. What I'd love to see in 5 years, I would say in 2 years, because I am an impatient soul that way, is that we are leveraging, you know, this de-identified real-world data with industry-leading machine learning algorithms to not rescue trials that are taking too long, but to be part of the strategic planning from the very get-go. To say, this is where we will go. This is where the data is taking us. And couple that with the fabulous operational and clinical expertise, that it is part of the strategy from the get-go. And that leads to that 4% that I just mentioned, eligible patients, you know, that actually engage in trials, that we make improvements on that number as an industry. So that patients who want to be on trials, we reduce the burden so that they can be on those trials, right? And then the third thing, not just, you know, reducing patient burden, but actually having diversity at DE&I to be representative of the patient and the disease natural history. That is something that's happening. We're starting to see that proof concept, et cetera, when we leverage these insights to go to the right area. I would love to see us doing that at scale in the industry, because it's going to benefit the patients, because those that are eligible and want to be on the trial can get access. But it's also going to benefit the medicines we're developing. If we can recruit faster, we can get high quality data faster in the right representative patient population, then guess what? The evidence of, you know, of the therapies we're developing are going to be more relevant and appropriate. And we can get these medicines to patients earlier, which is what we want to do. Because at the core of everything, and you know, for us at Janssen, I mean, we always say this, the core of it all, patients are waiting. And we need, and as John Reed, who heads up R&D, would say, we need to deliver with a pace that would make patients proud and that they deserve. So I'm just going to end with that. That is the goal. It all comes back to that. It's a win-win situation for all. And to do that, we really need to, you know, be open-minded and forward-looking as an industry to change how we work today, to evolve it, to be better for our patients that we serve.
Hey, well, great. Najat, thank you so much for your time today. This was a fantastic conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.